Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Welcome back to the Toolbox. How do you say screw you in Nashville? Bless your heart. Here's Dolly with the Gambler on the Toolbox.
Baby, when I met you, there was peace unknown. I set out to get you with a fine-tooth comb. I was soft inside. There was something going on. To me that I can't explain. Hold me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat of my heart, we got something going on. Tender love is blind. It requires a dedication. All this love we feel needs no conversation. We're riding together. Making love with each other. Islands in the stream, that is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong?
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam guest today from Podcast One's Attack Each Day, Jim Harbaugh. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, a round of totally topical TiVo trivia time today. And now, his kids' Easter baskets were filled with jelly beans, chocolate, and a disappointed look from Vinny Tortorich. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Yeah, man. And Bald Brian.
Hey, now.
Hey, now.
Wow. That was like a B12 shot.
You love a little Dolly in the morning.
Awesome.
I went to the Andre the Giant premiere.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, yeah. How was it?
Loved it. Great. Saw my buddy Bill Simmons there.
That's right.
Talked to Vince Vaughn for a while.
Is it awkward?
It's Andre, John, it's Cinerama Dome.
Oh, my.
Andre, yeah, it was great.
It was a fixture of my childhood.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's funny. You realize, like, when you make docs, it's always like, oh, it's always so sad at the end. But it's always sad at the end because a person dies
yeah,
at the end.
That's why there's a doc being made.
And there's usually like, they were in pain and their back hurt and they didn't get appreciated. And it, like, I think if you made a documentary about Sally Ann Warner,
who?
That's right. No one's ever heard of her. I've never heard of her.
Please tell me you made her up.
I made her up.
Oh, wow. She's plot twist.
She's just a housewife who lives in the Midwest. You followed that woman's life.
She's a part-time CPA, but she gave it up when she had kids.
She died at 67. You'd be crying at the end.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, she deserved a better husband. Her kids didn't appreciate her. Like, that school board was out of line.
Tragic story.
You know what I mean? Like, it was like, she had so much potential, but she never, she just didn't have, you know.
Such a tragic figure.
And all the, she was riding the crest of life, and then the back injury, and then the surgery, and the subsequent.
What could have been?
Then she got addicted to Percocet, and it's like, blah, blah, blah. I think if you followed anyone's life, if you skillfully crafted it, mm-hmm. I mean, if you had somebody who knew what they were doing at the helm, you could make almost anyone's life interesting. You could have a bunch of arc and high and low and this and that. And at the end, if you did it right, everyone in theater would be crying when Sally Ann Warner died at 67. Yeah. That's
R.I.P.
Right.
This
anyway.
This one's for Sally Ann. Let's really do a great show, you guys.
That's right. Let's dedicate Sally Ann. So anyway, it was great. I loved it. I think it's coming on HBO soon.
It's in a week or two. I'm very excited.
A week or two.
Yeah.
They're putting up the billboards.
And you can't go wrong. So that was great. Talked to my friends. Talked to Danny Two Sheets over there for a while. Had a good time and then hustled off home.
Do you have Vince Vaughn share stories about the old neighborhood?
Yeah, was that awkward?
Vince is...
It's Adam the Pyromaniac, Ron!
Vince is just one of these dudes that he's all business and not in a bad way. He'll talk to somebody and go, this guy's doing his own wine company. He's got warehouses. He's making documentaries. He's got a podcast. And then he said something. He said, beginning, middle, and end. This guy finishes. He has an idea and he finishes it. And I just went, yeah, that's it. That's all I try to convey to every.
That's a compliment.
Yeah. Everybody I know who is getting something done has a beginning, middle, and end. And then they go right on to the next beginning, middle, and end. And everyone I know who's a loser is just one big middle. It's just like I'm gonna write that book as soon and then weird circumstances
something gets in the way.
If I didn't have my roommate screw me on the first and last, I could get started on the book. But it's like you're 44. But like why? How did your roommate screw you on the cleaning deposit? Yeah. Like what's that have to do with you starting your book?
Every good or big project has some stumbling blocks. It's your ability to overcome those that makes it a worthwhile project or vision or whatever.
Yeah, their life is just sort of one big middle. Like they take whatever they were doing poorly when they were in their early 20s, they're doing the exact same thing. Like they just can't. It's like they're guys in the trades, right? Mm-hmm. They're good craftsmen, they're good with their hands, you know, they're good at putting stuff together, but they don't do the organization part right. They don't bill right. They don't keep their hours. They don't have the receipts. They just don't do the paperwork part of it.
Yeah.
They're the nuts and bolts guys, but they don't hand people invoices.
Right.
They just go, I don't know, give me $500, you know, and people go, I want to know what you spent on materials. But you talk to that guy when they're 23 and go, hey man, you got to get a notebook and a ledger and or you got to hire a girl.
Yep.
You know, if you're not good at it, go get this person to do it. You run that same person in their 50s, they're still doing the exact same thing.
And they have a system.
Yeah, except for their system is survival.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's tattered receipts and.
Thrivival.
Ooh.
Thriving. Thrivival.
Can I tie your thoughts back to Danny Two Sheets?
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Kellison, executive producer of The Man Show, and also
requires two sheets like a princess.
That's right. And also of Too Late with Adam Carolla. That's where I first really met him when I was working on that show.
And
I was
Crank Yankers and Beyond.
Yeah, but my first 5 months on the Comedy Central talk show, right?
Yeah.
And we had a week of hiatus, and I was a young up-and-comer, and I wanted to sit down with Danny Two Sheets, Daniel Kellison. Danny, can we have, 10 minutes? I just pick your brain over some things. And I was asking for advice, this and that, and he had a great piece of advice that I remember to this day. He said, everyone, good ideas are a dime a dozen. Everyone has good ideas. So you can find them anywhere. Everyone's got them. It's your ability to follow through and make it into an actual thing that separates, a good producer, a good creative, a good whatever from everyone else. Because good ideas are everywhere. Now, everyone who comes up to you and says, I got a great idea. It's probably a good idea for the most part.
I don't think you could even argue. You could never really say these words in all earnestness and honesty going, you couldn't say that is a horrible idea for a reality show that would never work.
Because no matter what, anymore.
Yeah, this is called we strap a camera to a wild raccoon and we see where the day leads us. What adventures may we find? What life unfolds in front of this raccoon?
I would watch that.
You couldn't say it wouldn't work.
Right.
No, it'd be great.
Somebody could nail it and it could work. So you can't say that's a bad idea. The trouble is the execution and the getting. I know. I was talking. Danny Two Sheets' greatest gift is getting people to
do things they don't want to do. And
must be a hit with the ladies.
I was going to say.
And sometimes death works with the ladies. It works with the gents. And sometimes.
I didn't tell you how I got the meeting.
Sometimes. Oftentimes, the person is glad they did it. Okay. So we were talking about just like sort of memorabilia and stuff and things. And I said, you know, this stuff, ruby red shoes and Paul Newman race cars and stuff, that there wasn't much of a premium on this stuff just a short period of time ago. People don't realize that the memorabilia stuff is Jimi Hendrix guitars were just the price of the guitar. Mm-hmm. 5 years after he died, it just wasn't a big deal. And now it's millions of dollars and whatever. So he told me that, he said, yeah, I got a piece of Pete Townsend's guitar.
Ooh, a piece. Implying it was one that's broken on stage.
Signed by Pete Townsend, saying, like, I didn't want to do it, or like, you made me do it. And I said, he said, I was producing for Letterman. I was doing segment producing. And I was producing Pete Townsend and his segment. And Pete was going to play an acoustic set. And I said, you should smash the guitar at the end. And Pete said,
honky tonk, man.
And this is where Danny springs to life. Pete said, I don't want to do that. And this is where Danny comes alive.
Come on, buddy. Come on.
He said,
don't be uptight.
And Pete was like, I've been there, done that. I don't know. My wrist hurts, you know. And Danny Two Sheets was like, you've done it, but not with an acoustic guitar, not an acoustic set. It would be awesome with an acoustic guitar. Right. And then Pete said, all right, go get, not my guitar, though. Go get me, you know, I'm not smashing my guitar. Find me a guitar, I'll smash it. And he smashed it and signed it for Danny Two Sheets, everybody.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's producing.
Oh, we here actually it have it.
Here it comes, lifting it above his head and down.
Wow, he really did whack that. He really
did. Any good artist, he commits.
He commits. He commits to it.
And he feels like a god. This is a great idea.
Yeah, it worked. It was funny. Made a great ending to the thing. The crowd went nuts. That's it. That's Danny Two Sheets getting people to do stuff they don't want to do since 1964. All right, he should have that on his business card. Yeah. Anyway, yes, he's Danny Two Sheets, because when he stayed with me when we were doing the Man Show pilot, he asked for a second sheet, and I
like
said, what is that for? Like, you're lucky to have one sheet.
Like,
I'm a mattress man. But he wanted the upper sheet. I didn't even know there was an upper sheet. I was, you know, 33 and living in Hollywood in a big house on a hill, and I had never really explored a second sheet.
I love how his non-outrageous ask was more, you turned into a referendum on him as opposed to a referendum on you.
Okay, Danny Two Sheets.
Like, oh, you want a second sheet? The kind that comes with the set?
His Highness.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's where I came from. I came from a horrible environment did not have a second sheet. The first sheet was always fitted if there was one, and it just stayed there, just lived there. Ugh. Bedding is one of those things. Like, I just had one blanket. And when I was like 19, they were like, we're going camping. I'm like, oh, let me get my blanket.
Off my bed.
I had a blanket. Yeah. Like, I didn't have a sleeping bag. I didn't have a quilt. God. I didn't have a comforter. I didn't have multiple things. I didn't have like linens or anything. I had the blanket that I had on my bed, and then I took it camping, and then I brought it home, and then smelled like a hickory log. Like, it smelled smoked because I was around the campfire the whole time, the thing around me.
That's so sad.
You're a mesquite for the next month.
It's awesome.
I don't know if it's a female thing, but like when I moved just now, I was so overwhelmed. There's so many things to worry about and to think about. And I thought, the one thing I can control is my bedding. So I just want to make this the most comfortable bed in the world. So at the end of the day, no matter what happened, I have this great, you know, sheets and duvet cover and lots of pillows. And that might be a girl thing. I don't know.
It's an interesting thing, which is, it's a little metaphor for how much you like yourself. Because my family didn't like themselves. So my mom had a mattress on the floor. It was like, you know, when they have like abandoned houses and somebody squatting there. That's what the mattress looks like on the floor. So the mattress on the floor. And now as I think about it, the aspect ratio of her room was insane because it was a crazy old house where the rooms, not my room, I was on the porch, but the rooms inside the main house were literally taller than they were wide or long. It was a house that had like 11 or 12 foot ceilings, like really high ceilings. If you look at the picture from the outside of the house where the roof breaks, that's the ceiling.
It was a little,
so super high. So my mom had a room that was like 8 foot by 9 foot with like a 12 foot ceiling, but a mattress on the floor.
Oy.
So it was like Alice in Wonderland or something. Yeah. It was like you look up and look down
Mickey's
at the thing.
Mansion.
It made it look even lower than the goddamn floor. Anyway, so Danny Two Sheets likes himself. My mom doesn't like herself. My dad doesn't care about himself. And thus, there's no trickle down, you know. It's not like, well, I don't care about myself, but I'm very interested in the kids betting. Sure. I don't care about myself. I don't care about anything. So you can see it manifest in the betting. Right. Like, I got a bed on the floor. You have a cot mattress in the back. Your sister has a poncho we got on Alvera Street. She can pull over herself. You can use that balled up, dirty sweat jacket for a pillow. And there's your life. There's my life. And then I just took it and ran with it after that.
You know.
It's like, I just slept on the floor. I slept on futons. Like,
you were living your truth. You're sleeping your truth.
Yeah. I was never like, what's up with the thread count? Like, I didn't know. So like,
is it sateen?
When I was 33 and Danny Two Sheets was telling me about an upper sheet, I was like, what is this? Get out of town.
Outrageous.
Now, it's weird. I had purchased myself a nice car to drive at that point because
well, reflected your interest, too.
It was like, I like cars, All right. Anyway, I'm getting a little depressed. Let me tell you about
that. I cut that off pretty quick.
Bespoke Post. Go to bespokepost.com. Enter Adam. Get 20% off your first subscription box. And Simply Safe. You know what to do. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Get the 24/7 protection. Just $15 a month. Oscar, 32, San Diego. What's going on, Oscar?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yeah, man.
Hey, I just had a quick thing to run by you, see what your thoughts on it were with the whole gun control thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's
going
to be people out there that want their guns and Second Amendment, and that's all right, but how about we add a little tax on there to kind of beef up the schools, like their security. You go directly towards some extra police officers on campus.
Would this only apply to public schools, obviously, since it's tax?
Well, yeah, I guess so, it would, but...
I don't have I suppose you'd raise more if you did ammunition than guns, although I don't know. It's weird to me that there's as many guns as there are people, and yet they still sell like they sell, I feel,
arsenal.
I understand, like, cars kind of wear out, you got to get rid of them. Guns don't really wear out, so it's just a weird thing, but I'd say your average gun owner, I'll bet your average gun owner owns 6.5 guns.
I was going to say, if you're a gun enthusiast or a firearm enthusiast, then you probably want to upgrade or add to your collection or whatever, right?
I think you own guns like if people that like guns, guys who like vinyl records, are like, what's your one record?
Cell phones. So you don't want to stick with the same cell phone forever.
No, that's not it. That's the opposite. Cell phone is get rid of the old cell phone, get a new cell phone.
Yeah,
this
okay.
is collect cell
sure,
phones. So people don't collect cell phones, but they collect vinyl, and they collect guns, and they collect trading cards or memorabilia. Like, they don't stop. The average gun enthusiast has to have 6.5 guns. And by the way, I don't mean a half. I mean, it's like 2.3 average. Children. You know what I mean? I'm generally against this thing of like, let's just add some more taxes and pay for it. How about the goddamn lottery pays for it?
Mm. Ooh,
how about that?
Pretty flush.
Nice.
Yeah, because that's just a dumb person tax anyway. Yeah. Why don't we just take the money from that and have that go to it? The other thing, who was I talking to, Max Zapata, on Take a Knee? Is it last week? We'll figure out the guy. It was this firearms guy, security guy. Trained military in hand-to-hand combat, blah, blah, blah. He said, listen, we used to have problems with fires in schools. That was an issue. There were schoolhouse fires. When's the last time? Oh, Matt Larson. Yeah, take a knee. Was it last week, 2 weeks ago? I do too many podcasts.
Last week.
So Matt Larson said, well, there used to be a lot of problems, fires, schoolhouse fires. When's the last time you heard about a school fire? When's the last time anybody perished in a school fire? And it's like, never.
Freddy Krueger's lost one.
Yeah, not even think about it. And he said, yeah, that's because they started designing schools with sort of that in mind.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Access and escape and fire alarms and, you know.
Put in some codes.
Yeah, and they made it with that in mind. Right. And he said, first thing we need to do is kind of start designing schools with this in mind. You can't, there's not 21 points of entry. There's one point of entry and so on and so forth. And I sort of went, yeah, it's not, you know, I get it. It's not apples to apples, but yeah, you're right.
Something
start
there.
Start with the design in mind.
Well, yeah. Speaking of that, on Facebook, there's a video going around. Chris, maybe you've seen it. I'm not sure. Some schools are now putting pods in classrooms that are you can't shoot through them, but you know you can use them for extra tutoring, and you can use them for other stuff. But yeah, once it shuts, it shuts.
Let me say this:
tutoring.
It's kind of
quote unquote.
I think it's kind of like parachutes on airplanes. Which is, if there's a couple of airline disasters, we all get freaked out because it's a freak out kind of thing. Now, statistically, it's a zero, but still.
It's in the zeitgeist.
You do two commercial airline crashes in a 9-month period and we will be officially freaked out.
Pilots.
All of us who have to get on planes almost every weekend will be freaked out. Now, then we'll start talking about what if we had a parachute system or something like that? We don't need it statistically. I don't know what it would solve in most accidents. You know, most accidents are like pilot error or something. They clip something on the way down or they didn't put their flaps down or something. The parachute wouldn't have done it. This is kind of that. It's more of like we're freaked out. We must do something, but it's not statistically going to be relevant. Oscar.
Yeah.
I would imagine there's a bunch of taxes on gun. It was certainly, we live in California. There's got to be a ton of taxes on gun and ammunition stuff already. It's got to be like cigarettes or gasoline or any of the other things we've deemed horrible.
The sin tax.
That everyone uses a lot of. So sure. I'd be curious about it. I don't think it's a horrible idea. I feel like from the governmental standpoint of like saying, let's just add a nickel to every cartridge, you know, just box of bullets. Or
they'll never notice.
Add 25 cents to every gallon of gas or add a dollar to every pack of cigarettes. It's kind of like me going, it's the opposite, but it's the same. And that it's like running a business and going like, well, things aren't going great over here, Corolla Digital. Everybody take a 20% haircut. Mm-hmm. Like everyone just go down. Then we'll have more money. And it's like, yeah, it would work, but it's not really the answer.
On,
the answer is get your business working. Yeah. That's the answer. Right. And we do it a lot here in California. We just go, look, we want to pay for this, want to pay for that. Let's see, the roads, potholes, what do people use, cars, gas. Oh, just put my ads, charge more for gas. It never actually translates.
Right. You're trying to address the end result as opposed to the cause.
The core problem.
And it doesn't force any real critical thinking, because if I could just go, well, everyone just take a haircut, 25%, and just drop the money off of my account, it'd be real easy to come back 6 months later and go, I spent that money. Yeah. Did you spend it? You said you're going to upgrade the air conditioning here. Yeah, I went to Laughlin with my lady friend. So I'm just asking for 3% more. And by the way, temporary. Right. Temporary. Just give me 10 months, 3%. I know I asked for the 25. Right. I know I said I was going to use that for security and air conditioning and upgrade the head over there with the toilet that runs and stuff. Just need another 3% haircut. And in 10 months, don't worry. It'll be right back okay, in your
cuz I am
so back in
so.
Your account. And then here. You get the it's 3 off hot. And it never goes back and that's then I come back again. It's easy. You don't have to fix your business. You just get more money from everybody. It's not a it doesn't lead to a solution. Hey, Neil.
Yeah.
San Francisco, 35. What's going on?
How's everyone doing? I just saw Road Hard for the first time last night. I really enjoyed it. And I noticed you never really, it seems like you talk more about your docs more. You doesn't seem to mention him much. I mean, do you ever think of potentially making another indie in the future or not necessarily?
No, I mean, I there is no, well, thank you. Thanks for watching it.
What the hell took you so long?
What the hell took you so long? There is no path for me in indies, movies, and even documentaries, really. But
yet here we are.
There is no path. The path with indie movies is you have to make a movie, you have to submit it to a film festival. I mean, by and large, like Sundance or something like that, they have to accept it, and then they have to screen it. And then you have to get a little buzz around it, and then somebody's got to buy it at Sundance, and that's the modality, or that's the path. Making a movie and then not getting accepted to any film festivals is not really it's not a financial path. The doc, the Willie T doc, I think didn't make it into Sundance, didn't make it into Tribeca, and didn't make it in South by Southwest. So it's difficult to not make it into festivals and then sell it because that's where you sell it. You take it there and you sell it. Now, the docs we can make on our own and kind of on the cheap, and it's also I don't have to quit my job for a month.
Alongside the other things.
Make them all, like, literally was standing in an edit bay yesterday looking at Willie T. Ribbs running at the Long Beach Grand Prix in Formula Atlantic and leading the race. And this thing that Willie had talked about in the doc, I'll circle back. The thing he said, I came out to Long Beach. They put me in an old car. I was leading the race, the whole race. And then the engine gave way because it was an old car and blah, blah, blah. And he talked about it, but I had never seen it. We just found the footage of the 1981 Long Beach Grand Prix, blah, blah, blah. So that's getting slugged into the film. Did not require me being on set or sitting in a trailer or writing a script or anything. So I like doing an indie film. I like doing a comedy. I suppose when inspiration hits, there'll be a third one coming, but there is no financial plan for me to do that. Adam Sandler has a plan. The Duplass brothers, I guess, have a plan. Like, other people have a plan. I don't. Bill Simmons has a plan. He's hooked up with HBO. I don't have a plan, and it's kind of a club. And you're in that club or you're out of that club. And I'm definitely out of that club. And there's no entry into it. And I don't, you know, after having the Newman 24-hour war and the Hammer all rejected from Sundance, I don't really, you know, those things are up in the 90s, 100s, high 80s. On Rotten Tomatoes. I don't really think it's about, well, the product, you know, because if I went to Rotten Tomatoes and the Paul Newman doc's in the low 40s or something, all right, well, once you step your game up and maybe you'll get in. But the 24-hour war is like 100%. Newman's like 90%, then 100 with the viewers or whatever. I can't remember which way it went. But the product, I think, is good. If you just took Sundance and you went, okay, you have romantic comedies, you have documentaries. You let in 80 romantic comedies, I'm making up all these numbers, and I'm going to make all these numbers up for the next 10 minutes. So write this down. You let in
memory.
You let in 50 documentaries and 50 romantic comedies. Then we wait 6 months, we let everything screen and be bought and sold and whatever, and then we check the average Rotten Tomatoes score on those docs and on those romantic comedies. I don't know what the number would be, but I know the average would be lower than the films that I submit. It just, it statistically would be impossible for them to be all in the 90s or whatever it is. So it's probably not the products. Sometimes it's the subject matter, but it's also, it's become clear through multiple attempts with multiple products and multiple events that that's just a group that you're either inside that group or you're not inside that group. So I'm not inside that group. And therefore, there isn't a modality which would to make money or break even. So this would have to just be putting in my own money and not getting it back, which I might do. But I'm not inspired to do it, right? Because it's a...
not a motivator.
It's a money loser. But thanks, Neil.
Glad you liked it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Glad you liked it.
Watch it again. It'll be wild.
Buy it again. Enjoy the hammer. Hey, go to Amazon or something. Leave a nice review. I like to read them every once in a while. It's fun. Yeah, Neil?
Neil doesn't want to talk about it.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Well, it's the nature of the business. I just was doing a... and look, I'm not... I'm fine. But there is, you know, there's politics involved with a lot of stuff, and that's the way it is. I mean, I get it. There's an element of, like, I was just listening to, I think I was telling you that Dennis Prager's PragerU had this lawsuit against YouTube or Google because he had 40 of his PragerU videos were censored or put on the censorship, which they can't be monetized. And if you have, it can't be shown in like libraries. And if you have the thing on your computer so your kids can't watch porn, then you can't watch a Dennis Prager, PragerU.
I'm sure he appreciates being put in that category.
Yes. There's, You can scroll down it. There's just a bunch of stuff, all different categories. Nothing, no swear words, no...
Look provocative, yeah. But I wouldn't say they look...
thanks. Anyway, now I'm yelling at Chris. Are the police racist, white feminists?
Born to hate Jews? All right. What ISIS wants?
Yeah. All right. Anyway, bespoke post. Subscription club that offers monthly themed boxes curated. What'd I say to you on the telephone, Chris Maxpata?
You wanted the story. You wanted the example of the videos that...
What'd I say about the example of the videos?
I don't know what you're getting at. No, tell me what...
I said pick five. Yes?
I don't recall.
All right, maybe our phone.
Yeah.
Maybe our phone.
Because I wrote down everything you said.
Okay. Where was I? Bespoke Post, subscription club that offers monthly themed boxes curated from unique brands around the world. Wide variety of boxes, themes, style, grooming, cooking, drinking, travel. We get them all over here. They are amazing. No commitments. They'll tell you what box you're getting on the first of each month, and you have 5 days to keep it or switch it or skip it. Just visit bespokepost.com, answer a few short questions, help them gauge your interest. Each box is only $45 with more than $70 worth of goods inside. It is Bespoke Post. We have it here. I have it here.
Got a cool one that just arrived. Like a little mini oak barrel and a decanter.
That's
yeah.
the drinking one. I got the killing a bear one with my commando knife.
And
here.
You always have it on you, just as
I
a
always
warning.
Have my commando knife on me. It's good stuff. It's not a bunch of cheap stuff, and it's a good gift.
Give an insulting letter from a bear, so you have reason to kill him.
That's right.
For your children.
Dawson.
To receive 20% off your first subscription box, go to bespokepost.com and enter promo code Adam at checkout. That's 20% off your first box at bespokepost.com. Promo code Adam, Bespoke Post. Themed boxes for guys that give a damn.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Let's talk to Eric. Eric, 30, Chicago.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Fan of the show.
Yeah.
Just wanted your thoughts on where Easter stacks up in the holiday rankings. You know, as a kid, Easter for me was way up there. Easter break, Christmas break, probably number two. Now, just below Memorial Day, just above Ramadan.
Wow. So elaborate,
just above Ramadan.
The elaborate
Ramadan. I didn't even know it was Easter coming up. But I have a weird, obviously I have a big hole in my game with dates and things. As I've always said, my birthday's on Labor Day or Memorial Day. It's one of the weekends.
Memorial Day.
And I never even knew it. Like everyone, it would always land somewhere on that weekend. I'd say like, what are we doing on Memorial Day? And then like, someone would have to go, well, that's your birthday. And I'd go, well, when is that? And like, it's Memorial Day. Like, so Easter is always that too. I never know when Easter is.
Well, Easter's tough because it floats. It's all over the place.
And I was thinking too, like on the way in, I was thinking, I'm not a religious guy. I've always been an atheist. I've never been a fan of religion, but I'll tell you, it does give people excuses to hang out with their kids. You know what I mean? Like, we were always atheists. So it was like, hey, we're atheists. Like, well, what are we doing on Easter? Like, we're not doing anything. We're atheists. Come on, get out of here. Like, it was like this, like, sort of never good reason to do
together.
Anything. It's, we're atheists. This is Easter. So what are we doing?
Yeah.
We're not getting a ham. Ham.
Can you imagine?
Easter ham.
So, you know, when I was a little kid, I got the basket with the hollow bunny and the green
grass,
you know, like that stuff. And then it just kind of went away. And then at some point, I remember eating a See's Easter egg.
Solid or hollow?
Solid.
Oh, now you're talking.
But it was on.
That's when you know you made it.
It was on a windowsill of my friend Snake's condo, and it was been there. I ate that thing in like August. Mm-hmm. It was like half eaten and been sitting there
Chunky.
For like four months.
Delicious.
I didn't care.
Flavors really soaked in.
I did not care.
What are your top three favorite holidays of the year?
You know, the
for whatever reason.
Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna try to figure this out. I'm gonna count Super Bowl Sunday as a holiday.
Now you're talking.
I'm
now
counting Super Bowl Sunday as a holiday.
Okay,
what other holiday does Jimmy come to you and barbecue, smoke things for you?
I'll All give right. Easter Sunday back for Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah. So I got that.
One's religious and one's Easter.
Yeah. I don't know. You guys tell me.
Well, I was going to say, oh, Gina, please, go ahead.
Well, I think just without even thinking about it, I can say my top three favorite holidays are 4th of July, because there's nothing like a good day drinking holiday. That's the best. And then Halloween and Thanksgiving. Anything that brings people together, you know, you drink on a boat with some friends, or I love cooking, so I prep for Halloween. I prep for Thanksgiving for a week.
I like Thanksgiving a lot because as you get older, it's way less about gifts or presents or whatever, more about the hang and the food and stuff. But again, it's like I got to hang out with my family, and my family just. It's weird. Like I said, my dad will just come in on Thanksgiving. Go, you want a beer, Dan? No. Champagne? No, thank you. Wine? No. And then just sit down.
What
and then like 2 hours later, you'll walk up to him and go, you want some red wine? And he'll go, no. And then, like later on, you'll go, we're having champagne. Want some champagne or a scotch or something?
I want some room temperature
water. Beer? Yeah. Do you have any Indian Tears or stream water? And it's like, no. And it's so weird that person, I don't know why, it bumps me. It just bumps me. Like, I'm like, I don't know, I'm having weird flashbacks because this person raised me. When that person's in charge, like, you don't go out and have a steak or anything ever because that person's sitting around eating matzah and watching TV. And so it's weird. It bumps me. I think I end up drinking enough for the two of us.
Yeah,
I don't know any other. I don't know any other human being who on Thanksgiving. I know guys who go, "Hey man, I've been sober for 11 years. Like after
well,
the whole
I wouldn't give.
After the whole shotgun incident in the nunnery, I've given it up." But I don't know anyone who just never gave it up. Like it's not. It's also it's not like the aforementioned Dennis Prager doesn't drink. And if you ask him why he doesn't drink, he says, it gives me a headache. And it's a kind of a Jewy thing. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like, but I don't care if you drink, but I just don't drink. My dad doesn't get a headache. Like, my dad can drink.
He's
like,
just,
it doesn't.
I'm good.
It just sits there.
Yeah. It would bring joy.
What do you think his last meal would be?
Raisins.
I think it'd be one of those cheese and cracker things where you peel the cellophane off and they give you a little orange stick.
Yeah, you spread it.
And he probably wouldn't be able to finish it.
Thank you, I'm good.
Yeah, he'd have like Show one cracker with a little cheddar with that red stick that they'd scrape the stick on it in there. I think you'd offer that to him and he'd wave it off. Like, that's too much. It's too much. You know, and then you'd go, how about I take an olive and put a raisin in it?
Now we're talking.
All right, but bring a knife.
Yeah.
And some foil. I don't know if I can finish this.
As a matter of fact,
this will be the most valuable thing I leave you, son. It'll be my olive collection with
all
the raisin in it.
Worldly possessions.
Yeah, and don't go golden raisin. I'm not worth it. Yes. I don't know.
Ranking holidays is pretty lame, and you can save that for Damashek. But an interesting thing is how certain holidays are, like, what's interesting is like a chart of what holidays are important to at what age. Like, if you're 6 or 8 years old, Easter is a big deal.
Christmas,
but by the
I
time,
imagine.
Yeah, by the time you get to, you know, adulthood, it's pretty far down there. Whereas if in your 20s, Halloween, St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo, these are your holidays, New Year's Eve.
Everything you can appropriate.
Yeah, then you can drink. Yeah. Exactly. And then when you get to be adult, Thanksgiving. You're ready to load
there
up
to eat.
Food. It's an ebb and flow for holidays.
Agreed. All right, Eric, you satisfied from Chicago?
Yeah, I think you guys hit it. Food, drinking, and
costumes.
Sports.
Yeah, I think the family thing, the problem, I don't know, there's a problem. I guess the family thing's like a kind of double-edged sword for a lot of people. Like, you know, they don't want to see him. They do want to see him. It brings back memories.
You're bracing.
Weird uncle who molested you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a lot of families who have that, had that run in with the uncle. Jesus. Like, what do we do? It's never been spoken of. Yeah. Like, I couldn't imagine being on either side of that table, which is the victim's got to have a million feelings going through them, and then the uncle's got to be every time that person is like, I'd like to say something. Don't say it. I'm going outside and smoking a cigarette. I couldn't imagine. I just couldn't. I mean, that's my whole thing with like the guys who have a couple ladies on the side. Like, I couldn't imagine like your wife going, you know, going, let me use your phone. Don't touch it. Don't listen to her.
What's your passcode? No, I forget. I don't think it has one.
It just seems like such a crazy calorie burn. I don't know, but I feel that way about embezzlement or something. Like, why would you go through your whole
risk reward,
just looking over your shoulder like that whole time?
But it always gets found out. Yeah. It always gets found out.
Well, maybe embezzlement and whatever, cheating, whatever, always gets found out. Maybe it's like people say their gaydar's 100%. Do we ever really know?
Yeah, how do you test that?
Maybe there's three people you work with that are gay. You have no idea, and it's never confirmed or denied. Exactly. It's never anything.
Well, let's figure this out right now.
You can't say. All right.
Hey, now.
Let me tell you about Simply Safe. Ready for anything that gets thrown at it. A storm that takes down the power lines. Simply Safe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line or destroys your keypad or siren, Simply Safe will still get you the help you need. I have it. Gargis has it. Mike August has it. Dawson has it. Oh, Maxipata has it. Could cost an arm and a leg, and it should, but it doesn't. They charge you what's fair, just $14.99 a month. No contracts, no hidden fees, no problemo. I recommend Simply Safe to everyone I know. We all have it around here. It is just the best, and it's new, and it's sleek, and these guys are doing gangbuster business because they offer a great product. You check it out. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam. Simply, S-I-M-P-L-I, safe.com/Adam. Simplysafe.com/Adam. All right, let's see. Madison, Wisconsin, coming up this Friday, doing a one-man show there, April 6th. Esports Arena, we're doing a live podcast there, April 21st. That's out here in Santa Ana. Cleveland, Detroit, Portland, two shows. Aladdin Theater, man, taping it, making a special. Going to take it to Sundance. Be the toast of the town, everybody. Seattle Moore Theater, that's a live pod. We got the cruise coming after that. All right. I interviewed Jim Harbaugh, Coach Jim Harbaugh.
That's right. Michigan Wolverines, right?
Played 15 years in the league.
Damn.
Jim Harbaugh, and I'll play that. I'll take a break, play that, come back with more right after this.
Adam Carolla is bringing his New York Times bestseller, Not Taco Bell Material, back to the stage this winter.
The reason the show is called Not Taco Bell Material is because I attempted to get a job at the Taco Bell in North Hollywood that was by my house, and they said, thanks, but no thanks.
In Madison, Wisconsin, at the Capitol Theater on April 6th.
We're looking for a slightly higher caliber of retard.
Adam Carolla, Not Taco Bell Material. Just added, Cleveland, May 17th. Detroit, May 18th.
Now I'm out on my own, and I've moved on to the fast-paced, lucrative world of carpet cleaning.
Adam Carolla.
Where a high school diploma will only slow you down, people.
Not Taco Bell Material. And don't miss The Adam Carolla Show live, April 21st in Santa Ana, California. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Jim Harbaugh?
Here.
Adam Carolla.
Hey, Adam.
Good to speak to you again.
You too. How you been?
I've been well. We rolling on this, Dawson? Oh, good. Well, here we go, man. Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, Tuesdays on Podcast One Sports and Apple Podcasts. John Madden is the latest guest. I feel a kinship with you, Jim Harbaugh, because we both feel like football kind of metaphor for life and what it takes to be successful, yes?
Absolutely. Your conversation resonated so much. Your football playing career, when you were an all-league player on a really bad team, and the lessons you learned from football and working and Jimmy Kimmel and working for free, all those, there's definitely a kinship.
Yeah, I wish it could be more purely expressed, or at least I feel like as a society, we're just getting further and further away from all the stuff that works. And you and I know what works. Like, I have an 11-year-old boy, and I know what works. But society, my wife, and her friends are constantly fighting me on something that I know works.
When are they going to figure out that Adam Carolla knows what works?
Well, it's like, You take a look at the school he's at. He's at a very nice school. It's a public school, but it's a very nice school. And it's run essentially by middle-aged women and dudes who think like middle-aged women. And so they've outlawed football at recess because football involves aggression and involves boys doing what boys do and it involves occasional injury. So they've said, stop it. So you have a bunch of people setting policy who really shouldn't be setting policy because they should only be setting policy for half the group, and those are the girls. They really don't know anything about young boys and how young boys interact and how they need to interact and the roughhousing and the socializing and all that comes from that pays so many dividends later on in life. So they basically went, well, some kid could get a scraped elbow, so let's outlaw it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm not I think I've heard this, and it's, I mean, I can't quote this as actual fact other than I heard somebody say it, and the sport for youngsters, for kids, that has the most concussions. What sport do you think that is?
Oh, so yeah, I would have said football or, you know, kickboxing or something until I heard somewhere. I think it was soccer.
Yeah, girls soccer.
Right. But somehow,
that's what I was told. Now, again, I didn't do the study, and I'm like 99% sure that that's the way I heard it.
Yeah, but here's why that's okay. It originated in Europe, so it must be bad. It must be good. Anything that comes from Europe with these assholes is a great idea. So if it's a Volvo station wagon or girls soccer, it's fine. If it's a Ford and it's American football, screw that. I wanted to bring up, so something popped into my
head. We do like to beat ourselves up. We do try to.
Oh my God!
In our country these days, we do have a tendency to go that direction, and and second guess ourselves, and then the what ifs. There's we are well over the legal limit of what ifs. I mean, sometimes you know, damn the torpedoes mentality. I remember the America. I'm sure you do too, where you didn't quite know how we were going to do it. Didn't know the where. Didn't know the what, or necessarily even the why. But we were going to do it. We're going to put a man on the moon. And it was just there was a confidence, and there was a yeah, we're going to do it. That's what we'll do. We'll put a man on the moon. Don't know exactly how or when or why or where, but I mean that's kind of how we rolled, you know, as a country, and we didn't second guess and didn't have so many second guessers or naysayers. You know?
Oh my God! Yeah, no, it drives. First off, people that know nothing saying like, "Hey, you kill terrorists, it just creates more terrorists." It's like, oh, really, genius? Does it work that way with ants and roaches as well? And how do you know all these pontificators, these professional pontificators on the news that are explaining to you how life works, who know nothing about how life works? All right, let's focus on football for a second, but a different aspect of football, which is you had your playing days and now your coaching days and your professional coaching days, University of Michigan now. It struck me moments ago as I was thinking about speaking to you, I thought to myself, Eric Kramer was a professional football player, and in a way, his professional career had almost a lot of similarities with yours as well. Would that be a safe statement to say?
Yeah, in a bunch of ways.
You're both, so pardon me, you're both good quarterbacks, not elite league quarterbacks, but good quarterbacks who played for a long time and played for many different teams. Eric Kramer, I played Pop Warner football with at the East Valley Trojans, and his dad, who I only know his first name is Coach, last name Kramer, his dad was really inspirational in getting me to play a second year after my first year where I just rode the pine. I sat on the bench my entire first year. I was 7 years old. I didn't even know how to get dressed. And I sat there. And then the next year I came out, and there was Coach Kramer. And he said to me, "Hey, Carolla, you're back." And I said, "Yeah, why wouldn't I be back?" And he's like, "Well, you sat on the bench the whole first season. I didn't think you'd be back." And I said, "I'm back." And he said, "I'm tickled pink." And I remember thinking, that's a weird thing. I'm 8 years old. I don't know what that means. But I liked it. And Eric was on my team of the East Valley Trojans for about four seasons. And then I went off to the Sun Valley Falcons and I lost track of him. And next thing you know, he ends up in the pros. And it's funny when I would watch him play for some of the same teams you played on, right?
We actually played together. We played, we were on the Chargers for a year in 1999. We were teammates.
And he also, I think he was a Bear. I think you were a Bear. He was a Bear. He may have been a Viking. I'm trying to think. What were all the teams you played on, Jim?
I played for the Chicago Bears from 1987 through 1993, then 94 through 97, 4 years. I played for the Colts, 1 year for the Ravens. 2 years for the Chargers, 99 and 2000. 1 year with, well, 1 year actually, I got signed by the Lions, was with the Lions in the offseason of 2001, and then I was cut right after the last preseason game, and then I didn't have a team for 7 weeks, and I was signed by the Carolina Panthers for 8 games, and then right after that season, and I went into coaching with the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah.
15 years total.
Wow, man. That is a long time in the league. Yeah, I guess with Kramer, I remember with the Bears and Lions, too, as well, were the two teams.
Yeah, but, and he had very good years, you know, Adam. It's like he kind of started off with, pretty two mediocre quarterbacks. But once you retire, you know, you're kind of supposed to be like fishtails. You know, you're supposed to be able to the fish gets longer, you know, as the
sure.
The tails get a little, that's the way prefer it goes, you know. But factually you are correct though.
Well,
we were both pretty good.
I'm trying to think. So I'm guessing that your will made you into a better player than maybe you even could have been if you had a little less will. I mean, I know that sounds stupid because you could say that about Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, but I mean, was it your hard will and work ethic and the things that you're sort of famous for that kept you in the league for as long as you were in the league?
Yeah, I think so. That can be said. As you pointed out, you know, most players, most people, I mean, sometimes, you could call it, some people call it a will. I mean, sometimes it's even called a chip on the shoulder. And interestingly enough, as you bring up Eric Kramer, there was a small chip on my shoulder. When I was coming out of high school, I was being recruited by North Carolina State, and I had an official visit set up. I was going to North Carolina State. Monty Kiffin was the head coach, and I was all excited because they set this official visit up. Number one, North Carolina, was going to be playing number two, North Carolina State, or could have been North Carolina State was number one, and North Carolina was number two. But I'm all excited to go to this game. It's going to be my official visit. About midweek, before the game was supposed to be on a Saturday night, and they called me up midweek, and they said, there's going to be a snowstorm in North Carolina, and probably not going to work out, and won't be able to fly in on Friday night as you had planned. I said, well, that's okay. You know, I could fly in Saturday, right? I mean, they'll have the snow removed by then. And they said, well, you know, we probably wouldn't be a good idea to risk it. And I said, well, okay. Can I come on the following week? And they said, well, Jim, to be honest with you, we're going in a different direction, and we're gonna sign Eric Kramer. So
wow,
yeah. So I'm kind of the rest, Paul Harvey, the rest of the story there. So a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, you know, and then competing against Eric. He was on the Lions, and I was on the Bears, and things of that nature. So, but a great guy, and finally, as I said earlier, we became teammates in San Diego in 1999, and great guy. I have a lot of respect for Eric Kramer.
Well, always the thing that's interesting to note is he's got to be one of the only guys who played that many years in the NFL who did not start as quarterback on my Pop Warner team. He actually was, I believe, I'm pretty sure Scott Whitman was the starter quarterback, and he was the backup quarterback. I think he played flanker or something, but I don't know how many guys.
That's right up there. That's kind of similar to Michael Jordan, right? Not making the didn't he not make the varsity team as a freshman?
Yeah, he didn't. And you know what's kind of interesting? And I've like two thoughts about it. You know, everyone always says, well, wow, that coach, what a fool. Well, you know, what a fool Mr. Gallagher must have been in 1974 for not knowing Eric Kramer was the talent that he was, or what a fool whatever the name of Michael Jordan's coach was in high school for not realizing it. But then I thought the other day, I was thinking about it, I thought maybe Michael Jordan wasn't Michael Jordan back then. Maybe Eric Kramer, when he was nine and playing for the East Valley Trojans, wasn't Eric Kramer the NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I've seen that in documentaries where he was cut from the team, and then he went back to the basket, and he was, you know, worked on his game, and maybe he got a chip on his shoulder. You know, maybe Eric Kramer, when he didn't start on his Pop Warner team, maybe that gave him a little chip on the shoulder. You know, there was a
well, his dad was
there that came out. Maybe the coach did him a huge favor.
I got to tell you, one of the things, you know, you all remember those little moments in your life. One time when I was about 14 or 15, And I was just in high school, and I was always good at football, but all of a sudden I wasn't that good at football, and I wasn't starting on the B team. And I had a friend of mine come up to me, an old friend, and he was very sincere. It's kind of the worst thing you can hear from somebody, because he genuinely wanted to know. He said, "You used to be really good at football. What happened?" And I remember thinking, like, oh my God, like, he's not calling me an asshole. He sincerely wants to know what happened. And it was the only thing I was good at. And then I wasn't good at it. And I just made that pledge right then and there. I just said, like, you'll see. I'll show you what's going to happen.
I'll show you. I think that's, I mean, if we could go back right now and just kind of replay your opening remarks from the interview. And, you know, for the youngsters today, I mean, just to take, I mean, the best piece of advice that you can get, you know, really. I mean, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And, you know, instead of, if adults would just give youngsters that advice rather than the advice of, well, you know, we shouldn't be playing this sport, or we shouldn't, you know, and giving them an excuse like this is too demanding, or this is too hard, you know, you should quit, or you know, some of the excuses that people come up with, or adults come up for kids. So I hope that makes sense.
It does, and I wish it was more the rule the land. It seems to be disappearing. Last question for you, Coach. Sure, you answer this twice a day, but you had so much success with the 49ers, and of course you've had a ton of success at Michigan, but any thoughts about going back up to the pro ranks? I feel like they miss you up there.
Well, I never been happier. You ask me how I'm doing, I would say never better. And super, super excited about our team. And my goal really is, I'd love to get 100 players. I'd love to get coach 100 players here at Michigan to be NFL players. And I'd love to win 100 games here. And so this is really personal for me, being at Michigan, for us to have great success in football and our youngsters to have great success in the classroom. So I grew up here, went to college here. It's just, I just want to have great success here.
All right, so no thoughts of that. And you have the best helmets in football, and I'm including the professional ranks as well. And I'm a Rams fan, so
that's a good helmet too. There's so many good helmets, but I do agree.
Nothing better than Michigan's helmet.
I'll throw you a fast fact. It's somewhere in 1,100 and some change of helmets that are like ours. So the Michigan helmet has been copied the most of any other helmet design in high school, college. Delaware has the same helmet, and then I think it's over 1,100 helmets with our design, the most copied helmet of all helmets.
Well, imitation, sincerest form of flattery, and guess who's never been replicated? The Browns helmet. the podcast, Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, that is Tuesday on Podcast One Sports and Apple Podcasts as well. And let's listen for John Madden coming up, latest guest. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. The John Madden episode was right up there with the Adam Carolla episode. No question about it. Two at the very highest level.
Thanks, Jim. We'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From Podcast One and the voice of the American people, it's time to fight back with Barbara Boxer.
It's so hard, I think, for the average person who has to get up in the morning to follow this stuff. This is a problem solvable. All we have to do is look around the world. They have made a difference in Florida. It's unbelievable.
Listen free and subscribe to Fight Back with Barbara Boxer, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, podcastone.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.